Prologue. The scene before Lucan reminded him of stories he had heard as a boy, of horrors millennia past. He recalled nightmarish tales of when Fang had first emerged, the great volcano that towered at the muzzle of the Maw. In that all-but-forgotten age, the mountain had not sprung from the world in a violent birth, but had gradually risen, lava spilling from its mouth, cooling, then spilling again over the course of many cycles, finally resulting in a soaring black thorn that protruded from the center of Greater Tar. The land then had been covered in ash, it was said, as it was now in the scene before him. Horrific, indescribable creatures from the deep, fiery pits of fury had clawed their way from their eternal prison to make war upon the living and claim the world as their own. Lucan had once believed that the stories were little more than a way to ensure the behavior of children. If the boys and girls of Tar were not good, adults warned, their mischiefs would call the evil up to the world of the living again. The worst boys and girls would serve as the first meals of the devils. Lucan stood beside the elf, watching, on the ridge overlooking the prayer of Thornwood, the vast expanse of grassy slopes that stretched for a radius of miles around the Trine crossing. Below their position and to the right, the pine stroke ran from the eastern foothills to the western forest, parallel to the Trine, which lay to Lucan's south. The once endless procession of ancient emerald trees marked the entrance to the homeland of the elven people. It now stood lifeless, branches barren of needles, blanketed in ash. A few days' ride beyond the tree line to the north lay the once tranquil and ageless city of Thornwood. Though Lucan knew that it, like all lands of Greater Tar, was likely no longer serene, no longer at peace. Thornwood was the beloved home of the elf, he knew, but how he knew these things, he could not say. 1,000 paces separated the tree line and the river, and in that field lay an army of felled and falling elven warriors. To his left, the poisoned gray-yellow waters of the Trine thickened with the blood of elves and the ichor of the unnameable beasts they battled. The mighty river that had once been a pristine and shining sibling of the Moorline was now a toxic vein of pestilence and blight, no longer giving life to the land of Tar, but stealing it away greedily. Lucan had never been to the Trine, yet he knew what it had once been. He could picture it in his mind, not as an imagination, but as a memory. Beyond the river, Lucan witnessed a relentless surge of blackened, hairless, shrill, and terrible creatures flooding the ashen prayer from the south. Many days' ride in that direction, Lucan's own city had once stood, the Kingdom of Mor, the home of man. He knew it stood no longer, yet again he could not say how. Lucan watched the battle play out before him as he had 100 times, and knew that the stories were not merely the artifice of frustrated parents, but rather an accurate portrayal of a horror that Tar had once faced and was facing again. Heroic tales of men, dwarves, and elves of the days of Fang's ascent were enshrined in ballads that Lucan had performed countless times to earn a meal in a tavern. He recalled his favorite, the Ballad of Mulgar, a hearty drinking song about a dwarven king who had fought the minions of disorder and rallied the peoples of Tar to final victory. In the scene that he now witnessed, no such heroics were to be found, only death and a single source of hope and light that stood beside him, the beautiful elf. The ubiquitous and mysterious woman who had accompanied him to this hillside dream too many times to count. Yet Lucan was terrified to turn and look upon her, for he knew that when he did, she would vanish like smoke and the nightmare would begin anew. Lucan knew he was not here. The knowledge comforted him, for truly being here would mean that the things he saw were real and they could not be. No, in no world where he wished to live would these terrors come to pass. Yet neither did he wish to awaken and return to his own world, a life in which he had no purpose beyond hustling his next meal, a life where he had run north, escaping the wrath of men he had offended. His true life was one in which his body most certainly lay dying somewhere. Lucan allowed his hand to rest on the pommel of the sword at his waist, a sword with a name he could not recall, a sword he did not own, yet did. As his fingers gripped the weapon, he sensed again that here, in this life, he had purpose. Here, his life had meaning, value, worth. Yet the cost of living in this world was more than he could bear, for he knew his merit was inextricably tied to the monstrous terrors before him. In contrasting the values of that life and this one, Lucan had decided that the only thing he truly wanted from either was to continue to share the presence of the elf. In this world, if only for fleeting moments, he could stand beside her. In the other, in his true life, he did not know her. Lucan decided then that if he should ever awaken from this nightmare, he would seek out the beautiful elf. He would find her if it took a lifetime. Lucan turned to look upon her, and again she faded like mist.